Mr. O'Sullivan, Rail 7. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about, still talking about your routine with the six links at Yarmouth. Were there any new weapons that you were introduced to at this stage? Things like the Thompson submachine gun. Did you have any contact with that?
No.
Was anybody issued with that at this stage?
Mm-hmm.
And what about exercises, schemes at this stage?
No, we did them.
Can you remember the first one you did with the six?
The first one was a river crossing. Yeah.
Yep.
Went to the river, I think it's called the Yarra, round Yarra. And we went out on a day scheme, crossing the river Yarra. We had collapsible boats, which we carried. And I don't remember where we crossed the Yarra. It was straight after the Smith's Trish factory. And we got in the Yarra of the tidal river. And when we come to get into the boats, the tide was down. So consequently, there was a lot of bloody mud to get into the boat. We managed to get into the boat, all right, no bother. But when we got across the other side, there was paddles in the boat, you know, with all their equipment. And the idea was that eight men across, and two men would bring the boat back to fetch six more. We got across the river, but with the tide being low, there was a lot of mud. And the first bloke who was supposed to get out and anchor the, you know, take the anchor, the rope up, went straight out without thinking, and he went up to his side in mud, and we had a job to get him out. But we, after that, the next crossing, we pinched some wood from Chris Smith, who was, what do you call them, pallets or duckboards now. We pinched some of them and put into the wood and come down on them. But coming back at night, we did an exercise up the river side, and we were getting down in sniping positions, hiding. We weren't firing, but we were saying how what range such and such was away, how many yards it was away. And then at night we couldn't cross the river again. It was in full time. He gets in the boat, which is still tied to the bank. And when we all get in, it will start to row. We row the boat under the water, and everybody went through because the rope was still holding it to the bank.
What did your NCOs and officers think
about that? The NCOs were in the boat with us. When we got back to Yarmouth, Captain Feeney, the NCOs reported to him, right, and why were all the men so wet? And he goes, good talking to him, being so bloody stupid. Because it was a stupid thing to do, to have a boat tied up. See, with it being tied up at low tide, the rope was below the water, and nobody thought to untie the rope. So we were pulling and pulling and pulling until we pulled the back end of the boat into the water. And then we realised what was up.
Any other memories of exercises at this stage that you went on? I think off the tip you mentioned one with umpires. Was that with the Foresters?
Was
that with the Foresters?
No, that was... Yeah, that was with the Foresters.
Uh-huh.
I was company... At the bike, I was company runner.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that when we get to the Foresters. Now, you were posted to an operational battalion, although you've said earlier that a lot of your NCOs thought that you were just a training battalion. Was there a higher standard of turnout, or do you think?
We got split up into units. We went mad on the coast. And we was stationed in... I was stationed at Salthouse. With just a platoon. And we used to do guard duties in right on the beach in a house belonging to Fatty Arbuckle in that morning. He was a film star. when we dug slit trenches, tank traps, which we dug them about 4 or 5 foot deep, and 8 foot square. Maybe more than maybe bigger than 8 foot. Trouble was during when the tide came in, they was good if they tried to land any tank through the water. Oh, and if there were a hole in the arm of piers, well, we didn't, but we were there with the demolition squad when they did.
What was that for?
So the invading forces couldn't use the piers as a landing place. It was a useless idea, that, because really they would have been far. I mean, the vehicles that we use now were just running to the beach, weren't they? Well, we blew holes in the other pier, both of them there. What was the call of the two piers? Wellington and. Another pier at the end. I forget what they call that one. One was called Wellington, I know.
So they made a gap in there?
Yeah, they blew a gap from, I think, a 20 yard gap in the pier. Both of them.
So you're in this new platoon. Do any personalities stand out apart from Captain Feeney?
There was a lad called Butler, and whether he was posh, what we would call posh, and. He was giving us instructions once of what we had to do on this. We were going on a route march, and we had to take the weapons, and every so often we had to disperse into the side of the roads for aircraft. You know, somebody would blow a whistle, aircraft over there. And every time we blew this whistle for aircraft, we'd look for a nice place to lay down. And the sergeant always with us, what they call him. He said, I'll bet you don't want to look for a nice place to lay down when it's real thin. And I thought about him later. So this lad was a bit posh. Well, he wasn't posh, he was a different dialect to me and you know, the rest of the Lincoln lad. He come from Norfolk, and he taught real broad Norfolk, and he used to always address the company commander as sir, you know, instead of captain or lieutenant, he was always, sir, if I go out the back, would it be all right? You know, where anybody else would just go out the back, you know, all the good stuff. He always asked like he was in school. So I asked the gentleman there if it's all right. And he was nice enough, he just got a lot of mickey taken out of him of his speech.
Does anybody else stand out?
No, so.
And did you have anybody in the platoon that was actually that had been a veteran of Dunkirk and of early?
No.
So everybody was new to it.
Most of them was new intakes before us. From the Lincoln Barracks, and they nearly all come from Lincoln Barracks, from Grimsby area and then that on the coast. You just sort of give a boast to them, and bring up to strength. But it's only sort of a training battalion anyway, it was never going to go in actual service anyway.
So what was your routine on you've had your soldierly duties during the day, you were off on these schemes. When you had your time off, what were you able to do?
You could go swimming at Yarmouth Pass if you were a soldier or an airman. It was open to them. It wasn't open to the general public. And I once went there with the running man Jack Mayfield in. And Jack Mayfield, as I said, was a good swimmer. And he got up on the high diving board. And dived, diving in. And he was diving, and he spit. I said to him, when I come up there, I said, what the hell do you spit for? And I said, the bloody water was that bloody still, I didn't know it was there. He said, for a minute, he said, I thought I was diving into empty pool. But it was, yeah, so that's where I learned to swim.
What about the local people? What were they like?
They weren't many at all. It was RAF and Army then. And the only local people who moved away.
I think you mentioned off the tape that there's a bit of jealousy or friction with the RAF. Could you talk about that?
When I came off that scheme, we were being crossing the river crossing business. In our billets, there was a nothing for our use. And when we came back, it was full of RAF blokes. And we decided we'd throw them out, and we'd have buffed up with the RAF. We were jealous of the RAF because there was far better treated than we were. They was on better money than we were. You know, even the ground crew, which was doing duties no more dangerous than ours was going to be, but they were better paid than us. Not only that, they had sheets on the bed. And it's surprising how it ranked us with our lads.
I think you mentioned earlier you thought the uniform was smart.
Well, they were smarter altogether. They were better looked after than the army. Oh, it gives that impression anyway. It's better when we just come back off a and they didn't have to do shit. They didn't have to go on route matches.
Could you describe this incident where you were in the Nathy and what actually happened?
Well, we come off this scheme. The clothes was wet through, the trousers, most of us anyway. One bloke was mud from his shoes to his thighs. And the thing we wanted was let's go have a cup of tea and a cake in the Nathy. And when we got there, the bloody place is full of RAF, and all the cakes have gone. And we went to pay for the cakes, and they'd pay for them, obviously. But we thought, well, maybe this room. So we started throwing them out, physically.
And how did they react to this?
Well, they resisted that. But they was in the same boat as we were. There was only rookies in the RAF, but only they weren't old personnel. There was youngsters that come into the RAF same as we got into the army. So we had a bit of a deal.
And did anything, was there any repercussions about that?
Yeah, they say I was on the RAF and coming into the unit.
So he was on your side?
Well, see, I was. PD was always on our side. It didn't matter what you did. If you did something wrong, Feeney would tell you off in private. He would back you up. You know, if it was something against, like when we were scrumping apples and that. If he got a complaint, he would back you up, but he'd never give you yankers. Maybe put you on fatigues, but he always backed you up in front of any other unit, you know, whatever it was.
Now, you've talked about the first scheme that you were on with the Six Links. Can you remember any of the other ones?
That's when we marched. We did a 10-mile march with him. Yeah, we mentioned that.
Yeah, we've talked about that. Yeah,
we did it in the shorter time and we've done the original one.
What about cooperation with things like, you know, artillery and tanks?
The only tank we saw was where we dug, at Lincoln, that was where we dug slit trenches, and the tank drove over us to show us that the slit trench was able to, you were quite safe in the slit trench if the tanks come on here.
What about live ammunition? Were you ever fired at live ammunition?
Yes.
Could you describe that? Was that with the Six Links?
That was with the Six Links. Went on to what they call a battle course, where water hazards, not extremes, what they cross. The path was laid out for us. There was a water to cross. There was barbed wire to go under, barbed wire to go over, slit trenches to negotiate, and you come out at the other end of this, maybe half a mile long. But over the top of us, the you know, some of the army units firing live ammo. And that, well, it's just an idea of the noise, because it's disorientating, the noise of gunfire so close to you.
How did you feel about that for the first, when you first heard?
Well, when we first heard it was going to be live ammunition, we were very apprehensive, I was thinking. But once we'd done it, we did it two or three times eventually. The first time we did it, once we got it over with, well, it was a slight relief. But the and the state of the bullets was only, they was going well over the heads.
And what kind of bullets were they? Was it machine gun fire or was
it machine gun and rifle fire? Well, we did come in contact with another weapon, the Vickers machine gun.
Could you describe that?
Never seen the bloody things. They stand about 2 foot off the ground, I think. They're on a tripod. You can either have it on a fixed firing line. And, you know, you can fix the gun so that it's going to fire so far in front of you. Or you can have it on a swivel, loose. And that's a bit. We never got to fire it, but we got to load it. Because and we got to make up the clips of the, because we had to, the belt was made up manually into three vehicles. And then we had to be going in Africa.
So were they part of your weapons with the six links at all? Was there any elements within them?
I never saw them used in the six links. They was never fired while I was in the six links, but they was introduced to it in as a lesson, you know, for the shoulders, how it took to pieces, how it worked, what you did if it jammed. With one lever, pull the belt back and drop it down again and extract the cartridge that had trapped.
So you were effectively taught how to use it?
Yeah.
But you didn't actually fire it?
No, I never fired it.
Could you just describe how your platoon would have been organised at this stage? I mean, how many men would be in the platoon?
And 30, roughly 30.
And?
There'd be a sergeant major, a sergeant, two corporals, and maybe two lance corporals. And then all those would be split up into files, you know. What the hell did they split the teams into?
Would that be sections?
Sections, that's it. Then you split into three sections.
And what would the what would be your weapons in the section, as you remember it?
And then we had the brain gun and everybody else had rifles. And when I was introduced to the Vickers, I was introduced to the Sten. But we never got any Sten guns and we never used any Sten guns.
Could you talk about that introduction and what that was?
Well, I always remember the bloke who showed us it. He always had to strip a weapon down and put it back together to see how it worked. And he said the Sten gun, although it fired faster than a Thompson machine gun and was lighter, was more apt to jamming than a Thompson. But we'd have had a Thompson. And it was a lot lighter weapon.
And did he demonstrate firing it?
No.
So he just showed you the weapon?
So he stripped it down, assembled it. Because it was similar in to a Thompson, but it wasn't as heavy. The Thompson had the cylinder with bullets in, what the magazine clipped on the top. The same one was similar, but it was a very much lighter weapon. But we never did it.
So it was still just rifles and brands?
Rifle and guns.
What about the 2-inch mortar, was that?
Never saw one. Never saw one fired in only Germans. Never saw one fired in England at all, not. I never saw The only thing we saw about the mortar was it was in a pamphlet. Pamphlet form showed you what it did and how you dropped the shell, but we never actually saw a mortar.
And did you ever, with the Lynx, did you ever do any training where you were under artillery fire? I think you mentioned you were under mortar fire on one scheme.
Well, not on a scheme, in real life, you know.
Oh, well, this is when you were in action?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're at Yarmouth, so you were effectively on the coast, on the front line, as so far as the Germans' Air Force was concerned. Were you troubled much by air raids?
There was, yeah, we got one or two raids when there was a plane shot down there. And it had been bombing in Yarmouth, and it had turned round and was going out to back, and they shot it down, and it landed just beyond Wellington Pier. And we had to go, the army went and fetched it out. We had to go out and make sure that there was no crew members left alive in it. But the army fetched it out the next day or two.
So did you actually see this thing?
Well, I saw the bomb, yes.
So what did it look like?
There was a two-engine bomb. The only lesson was, you know, don't know this thing.
And had it come down in one piece, or...?
Yeah, it had crashed. One of the wings was... apparently the shell had hit one of the wings and it was badly damaged. It had been over... It had flown over Caister, which is just outside, you know, and bombed somewhere around there, and was coming back again to the room, I think. And there was back at camp at... Oh, you know, Caister. Yeah, they must have got it. Well, that's another thing. They took us to... Was it Weyburn? No, that's down there, isn't it? There was a big ACAT camp around there somewhere, and they took us from there to show us how the ACAT camps, how the ACAT companies worked, and showed us the guns actually being fired, and the Wrens, not Wrens, JTS girls working on them. That's the first time so many girls while we're down in Yarmouth, more or less.
So what did you make of that?
We had a good day. But there was, was it Weyburn? There was a big, ACAT camp. There was men there as well, actually, all of the women.
What did you feel about the men and the women mixed in a mixed unit like that?
Well, we were more envious knowing that they wouldn't be going abroad. That's the envious. We did talk about it. You know, about, well, unlucky boys will be stuck here. They're never going, they're going to get the regular leave, and we're going over there.
What quality of... Were they noticeably less fit than you were, these fellas that were on the back out?
Well, they weren't as fit as the regulars. They were fit, obviously, because, I mean, they'd been trained as soldiers, but they were in their cat wounds, you know. Why didn't they? Well, no, they weren't as fit. The girls weren't as fit. The girls weren't as fit as us lads, because that's all we were, really, weren't we? 20, 21, 22.
I should have asked you earlier, Mr. O'Sullivan, you weren't married at this stage, so you were a single man. About what percentage of the men in the platoon, as a recruit, were married? Were many of them married, or pretty few of them, or what?
The sergeant major was married. The sergeant was married. I don't know anybody else who was married.
So most of your friends and colleagues?
Private soldiers. The sergeant major and the sergeant were regular army men. That's what, and they were older than us, obviously.
Any other memories of your time with the Six Links? Things that we haven't talked about, incidents that happened during this period.
I remember getting a dance already. I remember watching the horse. When we went to Salt House from Yarmouth, something really interesting. There was a naffy with two girls. One girl was going out with a sergeant major who was already there, and the other girl was friendly with the sergeant, so there was no female company. We were to go watch to this farm and watch a stallion servicing mares, and that was the entire... That's all we could do. We could win the naffy, we stood to in the morning, just the same as if we were in real battle. We stood to in the morning in position, facing the coast. Somebody was on duty all day long on lookout. What was looking for smoke and ships and there was a house right on the coast. And that's where we had to go. Every 4 hours it was changed. And we marched from our village in Salthouse. The population had been moved out of Salthouse. It was only a very small village. But there was no, the only people who lived in that village was the bloke and his missus who kept this stud farm. All the others had been moved out. So we was in houses, which had been civilian houses.
And did the entire company move to Salthouse, or just your platoon?
Just the platoon to Salthouse, and the platoon to, and we went right along the coast, different platoons.
So how did the battalion as a whole keep in touch with your platoon?
We had a wireless.
You had a radio?
They'd been wireless, is what you had to wind a bloody handle with. What do you call them? Field telephones.
So you were linked up by the field telephone?
Yeah, by field telephone.
So did that give you an element, I mean, you had nothing to do? Really, but did you have an element of freedom from army discipline?
Oh, that's yeah.
So how did things loosen up compared to?
Well, because the sergeant who was there in charge, and the sergeant major, as long as you was there to go on guard duty, at the time you were supposed to go on guard duty, the day was yours. Or unless you was put on matter to go into cookhouse and play spuds. If you was put on fatigues, you had to do them. And there didn't have to be any arguing. Same as latrines had to be cleaned, just the same. But as long as the camp was maintained, so that if the field would come down to inspectors, everybody knew where everybody was and what you were supposed to be doing.
So what was your actual billets? You had 30 men in platoon. Were you all in one house?
No, it was all in different houses. It was all in the... Well, it was, as I say, it was a small village. It was all in the same area. Of course, the sergeant major and the sergeant was in the best house. I was in the vicarage or whatever like it's called. And that was it. And we were maybe six men to our house, maybe seven. It just you could more or less choose who you went with. You know, out of the 31.
What about the sleeping? Was it bunks or was it beds or?
It was palaces.
That's filled with straw.
Civilian. The civilian furniture was stored. Because while I was in Yarmouth, in the big hotel there were some rooms as big as that wall, and people had cut pieces out for ambulances. I mean, they must have done an awful lot of damage. I don't say our lot did it, but somebody had done it. So the civilian, it's all types of civilian furniture was stored. Might be stored in one room in that particular house. We weren't allowed to use it.
And there were no other soldiers around at all in this village? They were just
no, there was only just the Lincolns. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you mentioned the plane being shot down. Was there any other incidents at all during this period?
No, not really.
Yeah. Do you think the government, do you think the authorities, the government were still fearful of an invasion then at this time?
Yeah. While we were there on the coast, some of the older soldiers had been said that there'd been an attempted invasion and they'd fired the sea. And whether they ever did or not, I don't know. They said they put oil on the water and fired it. And they said that dead Germans was washed up on the coast. But that was only what they told us, whether they were trying to frighten us or, you know, that's what they said. And some of them believed it.